You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Circle Waves. These guys are a rock band from Liverpool who are driven by their goals in an awe-inspiring way. In the last few years, they've been relentlessly touring the world, elevating their skills over the course of three albums that have come out quite quickly. Their most recent album is called What's It Like Over There, which is easily their most ambitious album to date. And it's that word that is especially important in the story of Circle Waves, ambition. They've never been shy about their goals, which is unfortunately a bit of a rarity in the UK. When I heard this new album of theirs, it was immediately clear to me that they were keen for challenges and to be taken seriously as a band, while also making sure they had a lot of fun along the way. On this episode, I chat with Kieran, Sam, and Colin, and together we discuss the surprises of making album number 3, crafting songs that mean something to them, and how growing older changes your perspective and priorities. This is the 405 Exchange with Circle Waves. Enjoy. So it's been a mad couple of years for you guys. Like, I was telling Kieran how the first time I met you guys was when you were, I want to say it was the first time you came to the States, when you were supporting Fools. And it was a pretty mad run. I remember particularly you guys also played at the Knitting Factory. It was an amazing fucking night. And now to have you back here and like three albums, like, it wasn't that long ago. Like, does it feel like it's been a while? Like, how does it feel knowing that like you're back and you have like a third album to tour for right now?
When was the last time
we
met?
It
was Tudor,
wasn't it? Was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yes, we supported Tudor Cinema Club 2 years ago. We did like a 3-week run with them. But 2 years has gone by so quick.
Oh, right.
It's always that thing, you look back, and everything we do, I go, oh yeah, I just think it was like last year. And then you look at it and it's like, oh no, it's 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Because you're on to the next thing like so quickly that it just flies by, you know?
I'm really keen to hear how this new album that you made came together, because something that I really admire about your band is how open you guys are about ambition. It's something that I'm definitely going to bring up over the course of the talk, but like, I grew up a bit in the UK, and something that I think is interesting in contrast to the States is like being very open about your ambitions and your desires and like your wants of like things growing isn't really as innate in British culture as it is in the States, I would say.
You're supposed to be modest.
Yeah.
Not really. I think in music it's always, I find modesty and being a bit like, oh, we're just really happy. I'm just like really happy to play this. I'm like, no, fuck that, man. Like, you should want to be headlining that festival.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that like part of the reason why we have gone up the bills in festivals is because we say we want to do it, we tell our managers we want to do it, we tell people, and we try and make records that sort of mirror that, and that eventually, I think it equates to some of the success that we've had, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, in other walks of life, I'm relatively modest, you know? I'm a terrible painter.
I'm quite immodest, I think.
Immodest?
I always brag about, I've been bragging loads about my cooking recently.
If anyone says a meal, I didn't
realize that I was doing it until you called me out on it, where I just kept talking for ages about how I was great at all these different dishes, and I've never made them for anyone. I'm just like throwing it out there.
Kieran, do you like pasta? Oh, I make a banging pasta.
Great pasta. Secret ingredient is love.
But going into that, like when you came off touring Different Creatures, which in itself is such a big step forward, where do you feel like the band was creatively? Like when you come off of touring for a record like that, where did you find yourself thinking about where you wanted things to go next?
I think a band's second record, you're always, you played like 200, 300 shows. We did that first record and it was definitely like a reaction to that. I was kind of sick of everyone going, oh, your first album's a summer record, it's about summer and nice stuff. So I kind of think we enjoy like the reactions to the heavier songs live, and also wanted to counteract that sort of summer pop vibe a little bit and have this idea of a record that was based in the nighttime and a bit dark and a bit you know, we all grew up listening to like Queens of Stone Age and Foo Fighters and Nirvana, so I think we always wanted a record that just had that element to it. And it's good, like, there's parts of the set now where we still have that like poppy vibe, but we throw in a song like Goodbye from the second record, and it really like makes the live feeling just this a bit more like visceral and you know, energetic.
You know what, bring up the, I'm going to go into that album a bit more. Before I go, you mentioned like something nice in the live area there. I remember last time I saw you guys with Colin, you love jumping on the drums and banging them to death.
I was going to say, I think that was the show where Andy DeLuca, this photographer's got a picture of me like,
yeah, Andy's a good
smashing the, yeah, the shit out of him.
Well, when Colin joined the band, we like, we played with him, we were like, right, great, really good drummer, can't wait to play the first gig.
Yeah.
And we were playing like the show and like, so the first song ends and turn around and Colin's like on top of the stand, like this fucking seat, jumping around like with his arms up in the air. And I was like, what the fuck is this guy? And it's actually, it's become like one of my most entertaining things, just turning around and watching Colin. He's much more entertaining than the crowd a lot of the time.
It's a really amazing thing to see. Your latest album, What It's Like Over There, came about quite differently than the previous albums. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I read that you, Kieran, found a journal of things that you scribbled down on the road, and that kind of informed like the lyrical direction in some ways, right?
Yeah, I sort of take like a little book away with me in a lot of tours and write sort of blueprints of songs and lyrical ideas. And just that I don't really look after them, so I kind of, I'll lose them, and I lost this one. And when we were at home after the Two Door Tour, I just kind of didn't know where to jump off with the next record. And then sort of came across this old sort of journal diary from America, and it was kind of like I didn't even write it. It was a bit weird. It was kind of like this other person. And, you know, I found like lyrics for movies, which I wrote in like Tulsa. And I was like, oh, fuck, man, that's a good lyric.
Yeah.
Like, that guy's a great songwriter. Whoever wrote it. It turns out it was all Colin.
The modesty, folks, the modesty.
No, it was like, it wasn't me, it was this other great songwriter. That's a joke. But yeah, it was cool, and it was like, it was a really good way of kickstarting the record. And because it was all written sort of in America, it was like, you know, what's it like over there, sort of a little bit of a remark on me writing it from Liverpool, looking at this guy who wrote it across America, and really that back and forth between two people who are the same person.
I love that duality, and something that I'm really interested in knowing about is like, I feel like with this record more than any of the others that you guys made, the lyrical content definitely informed how you would go about it musically. Like, I feel like the music itself is so tied to the overall feelings, the tone, and the mood of the lyrics, that I wonder what it was like for you as a band to come together and decide what a song needed.
Well, I think we just wanted to serve Colin's lyrics as best we could. I mean, that was the main thing, was like, he's put all this effort in, and we just want to make sure, you know.
Still not there yet.
We'll get there, man. Yeah. We'll get there.
Fifth album.
I think it's cool. I quite like it when a song, like the sound of the song, you know, matches what the lyrical content is.
Yeah.
But then I, you know, but saying that, I actually also love, like MGMT. Like, I find their songs are so uplifting, but they can be about like you know, drug abuse and people OD and stuff like that. I quite like that juxtaposition as well, so I think both elements of songwriting are like that cool.
Yeah, I feel like Movies is arguably like one of the best songs you guys have ever done. Like, I really love that tune. It's really powerful. And I want, like, for me, as someone who's been familiar with your music since the first record, I feel as a listener, this is a very different type of circle wave song, but does it feel that way for you as the people who've made it?
Movies.
Yeah.
I always saw it as the kind, as the song on the record, which people who are fans of the first album would like the most. Like, it felt like it was a progression, but at the same time was like, was kind of a link between the two albums. That's the way I've always seen it. But I don't know, but yeah, everyone's got a different perspective, I suppose.
You always notice that, like, that one gets a good response live as well.
Yeah.
Similar to, like, T-Shirt, whatever I'd say. It's like, people dance to it, a move to it. Like, yeah. It definitely, there's a connection of movies to people. Which could be the first record.
It could be that. I think the guitar plays a big role in that, particularly like kind of like how it's bouncing around the drums and that.
And the bass, you know.
Yeah, you know. Arguably the most important instrument, man. Don't worry.
Yeah. I mean, you would have to argue it.
Times Won't Change Me is a very different type of Circle Wave songs. It feels like a massive step forward. It really just feels like with this one, you guys went for it. And this is another one that I couldn't help but wonder, like, while listening to it, like, what was the mood like in the room?
What were you thinking?
But in the way that where it's like, I always love when I listen to an album and a song doesn't sound obvious, and I feel like this is a prime example of that.
Mm. Yeah, I think we're all fans of, you know, bands like that who don't sort of stick to the rules of what they should sound like. That was one just like sort of came up with the piano part because there's pianos in the studio we were in. There's like two, a grand piano and an upright piano. And I was just fucking around with like this sort of stomping piano thing.
Yeah.
And then instead of real drums, we thought we'd try like a big sort of Jay-Z kind of kick and then a big clap from, I don't know, some sort of 808 or something like that.
We nearly didn't record it though.
Yeah, it was a last minute.
It was like we had the songs ready for the album and we went in and one of them, I can't remember which one it was, just wasn't coming together. And then someone was like, well, should we just do that piano one instead? Because I think that's cooler. And I think that was like one of the best decisions we made on the album, really, was like, I don't even remember, what song was it we were working on? We dropped for it.
Oh, Sympathy.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And it just wasn't working. And then it was like, yeah, I was like, sack it off and do this piano thing.
Just trying to fit that song in. Well, knowing that we had like a set time of each song to record, and there's this other song that's come in, and we're trying to fit it in between like bits and pieces. It was really interesting, like over the night of when me and Kieran were living in this like Airbnb, and Kieran kept going like singing this riff idea.
But what was the song I was saying? Is it the Moby tune?
It's
like a Moby tune or Fatboy Slim. One time, that was a classic. And I was like, what is this song, Colin? And Colin just listens to AC/DC, so he didn't have a clue.
Is it Back in Black?
And so I was like, man, that wouldn't it be cool to do something like that? And like the dum 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 dum. A bit like Dolly Parton, a bit like Scissor Sisters, a bit like that Fatboy. So it was just a bit of an amalgamation.
But different enough where they couldn't sue us.
Yeah, just different enough that no one could sue us. It turned out to be one of the best songs on the album in the end.
So. I would definitely agree with that. You know, earlier I brought up how I met you guys a couple years back, and it's actually been a really beautiful thing, the fact that you guys have just gotten really closer, clearly, with being in this band, where, I mean, you know, people talk about like how music has to be nowadays, but the fact that a band can thrive and release three records in like what, like between 5 or 6 years, that's pretty amazing.
I think we've learned to be quite frugal and quite clever with how we spend money as a band, and you know, we produce the records ourselves with Alan Moulder, so we sort of we record albums quickly. Yeah. We want to keep making music and keep this band sort of touring and releasing music so people can consume our music quicker. So we're just quite like quite clever about it, I think, in that we don't want to. Oh God, I'm so modest. No, we're just
the great thing about me is that I'm just so fucking clever.
But it's like, yeah, I think if we were 18, we wouldn't give a fuck, and we just spend loads of money on recording with, you know, top notch people and all that, but we just do a lot of stuff ourselves, and you can make more music that way, I think.
That's true. You know, something I've learned from like doing a series like this and talking to a lot of different artists is I've noticed that when it gets to talk to artists who do things themselves within that type of manner, the way you're discussing, is like, it takes a lot of trust amongst everybody for that to work. Like, would you agree with that? Do you feel that's the case with all you guys, where there's like this innate trust within your abilities as artists?
Yeah, I feel like we've got to a place now where we've all carved out little sections. Like, Joe does a lot of video stuff for us. So when it comes to like video things now, I just go, yeah, Joe's got it. Like, I know that he knows what he's doing, and he's and like there's little bits like that that everyone's just got their little thing.
Because your one is.
Looking after you, you fucking idiot.
It's a 24-hour job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
I hope you don't mind me getting really personal for a minute, but Colin, I know your partner a bit. I know like you have a beautiful young son. And the reason I bring that up is that I think it's an amazing thing when you get to have friends at a young age, and not only do you get to grow up them and make music, but when families start to form, I feel like, you know, like essentially the other three members of Circle Waves, they're that child's uncle. And I wanted to bring this up because I think people would love to hear, and I'm definitely genuinely curious what it's been like for you guys to have essentially a child introduced into your life.
it's cool, man. I mean, it is weird to all, because we started the band 7 years ago now. And there is a lot of change in that. Like, I was 26 when the band started, so I'm old as fuck now.
In like, 2019 years, yeah.
So like, it's sort of you do grow up and you go through big changes, and like you learn. Like I've just had a baby. I got married. You do all this you do all this grown up shit, and like you do experience it with everyone, and I mean. It's a bit like a sort of like living in a sitcom sometimes. I feel very lucky to share all that with these.
But I feel like if it is a sitcom, then we're getting to the natural point of a sitcom where it ends, because like Friends ends when they all have kids. No one wants to see that. So maybe I don't like that analogy.
Friends isn't real, Sam. Yeah. I told you this.
This is real life, not Friends.
What?
Yeah, look at the Rolling Stones, they've got loads of kids.
Oh, that is true.
They've got 25 kids each, and they're still going.
It's pretty fucking rad, like.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, I think we're all fortunate to sort of, have families and like good home lives and stuff to, once we go on tour, to go back to. That's kept us slightly normal.
Yeah.
Just on the edge of being normal.
Just on the edge.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing to be able to have a child while kind of in this position as well, while touring, and as much as it is difficult being away, like when they can come to shows and when they can do it, like they get to experience that side which like not many kids would get to see like growing up. But hopefully they'll remember it in like a few years when if we're still going.
I reckon they definitely will, man. Because honestly, that's something that I've been fortunate to spend some time with some acts who have kids and seeing them like on the road or just on a hop for a couple of dates at venues. And I always find myself thinking like, that's fascinating that this kid gets to see this. And not just like their dad being like a fucking rock star, but the fact that they get to see that it's an actual job, like there's some practicalities behind it. Like it gets demystified, but in a positive way, I think. And, like,
Beautiful. I think it must be interesting. I mean, there's certain people in bands who, they probably have parents in bands who then go on to try and be successful and are in the shadow of their fathers or mothers. So I'm just trying to make sure we don't get too big so that he feels like he can't go on and do music himself, you know?
Again, folks, the modesty.
Yeah.
Again, with the modesty.
I think he might want to be an accountant.
He might do, yeah.
It's
not my fucking son.
Yeah, I was
gonna say. No bloody son of mine's gonna be one of those accountants.
Mate, you will not be clever enough to be an accountant. If he's my son.
It's gonna be like the reverse. It's gonna be like a Billy Elliot scenario.
Yeah.
I didn't. Do you actually have a son as well? Were you not?
I do.
Congratulations, man. That's huge.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's somewhere. I don't know where he is.
I just think it's important to bring this up sometimes because, like, what a beautiful thing, right? Like, you get to a point in life where like that just happens, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really interesting. It's like. It's definitely. I've not really written a good song since he was born, though, so that's worrying.
Are we just gonna have to? Has he inherited all your musical powers?
We're gonna have to wait for 14 years for him to write us the next song. Yeah, man, he's cool.
Before I get out of here, I just want to jump back into the thing I was mentioning about ambition, because that's something I have latched on a lot with your band. Like, I think it's interesting when you can figure out a word that you kind of associate with a person or a group of people. And I think what's amazing is that that's always on my mind when I listen to your music. I find myself thinking, like, wow, these guys really want it. They really fucking go for it. And, like, this is a bit of a big kind of lofty question, but, like, you know, words are words. How important is it for you that something like that comes across in the music? Like, you were saying earlier, Kieran, about, like, how you will say, like, hey, we want to do these big things, you know, so that way you're put in position to do them. But how important is it that when people actually listen to the music, they feel that as well? Not just you guys, but not just you, but all of you. So.
I actually think in terms of the sound of a song, I don't think it necessarily has to sound ambitious to get into like bigger rooms, if that makes sense. Like, say, like, listen to Arcade Fire, it's relatively small sound and like production and stuff like that, but then it does translate to this arena sound. And the same like the first Arctic Monkeys record, that was very much like a garage rock band, but then they were playing arenas. I think the most important thing is the song has to just be fucking incredible. And then, you know, like, that will just find its way to these bigger places. If you write a song for arenas, it's probably going to sound a bit false.
Yeah.
Or maybe like Oasis.
It can go one of two ways.
Yeah. Some people might be able to do it, but I've never been able to write like that.
Yeah.
I just kind of try and write a good song and hope that it will push us further and make us bigger.
Yeah, and I didn't mean it really in regards to lyrical. I hope it didn't get kind of like mistaken in a wrong way. I guess what I mean more is the spirit. I guess, like, obviously loads of bands play fast, but there's a particular way you guys play music where I just feel like there's this feeling that's coming across, like, sonically.
I think we've always liked bands that have been like full of energy and really mean it. Go out and play each gig as if it's your last, sort of ideal.
Yeah.
And, you know, your fingers are bleeding and you're sweating to death. And I think we sort of leave it all out there on the stage. And I'd feel weird if we didn't. I'd feel like we were cheating people out of the $15 they paid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Before I let you run here, the album ends with the track Savior, and I feel what's really great about this is this prime example of what you've been able to do going forward with this album, where it's a rock song, but there's so much heart here, there's so much being expressed, and it feels like a great send-off for an album to me, and essentially kind of also a nice window of what might come next. What do you feel like a track like this says about where Circle Waves is going?
I think what we did with Savior, and what kind of what we did with that last album in general, I think what we tried to do was to get rid of this idea of what a Circle Waves record should be. I think we're at a point now where I think we could kind of do anything, and I think people would accept it. I think that was the main aim on that record, and I think we achieved it.
What an amazing thing you got to say that. Like you guys are at a point now where you recognize that you could do something and it's just going to innately be Circle Waves. That's a really special thing.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it. Maybe we've opened Pandora's box a little bit too wide. Because now, you know, there is a point where I'm a bit like, you know what, we could literally just do like a record with just violins. And the lads would be like, oh.
I
don't know about that one. But I think, you know, I really would encourage other bands and anyone who makes music to not stick to the sort of those rules of...
Yeah, like if you're putting songs on your third album that could be on your first album, you're not doing your job properly. That's what I think. And there's loads of bands out there that do that, and it's bullshit.
There's so fucking many, like...
Yeah. Like, what's like, why bother? You've made that album once. Move on.
Yeah, don't make another 7 times. Circle, thanks for catching up with me. It's really good getting a chance to talk to you.
Thanks very much.